Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Oh, hi. Hey, this is Cody Johnson from the Worst Year Ever podcast that you are listening to with your ear holes. I'm joined today, briefly, by my co-host, Robert Evans. Use your words, Robert.
Hi.
That's the sound of the tone of the rest of this segment of the episode. I was gonna ask you a question leading into that, but you've nailed it. You've answered my question. Katie Stoll is another of our co-hosts. She is in the woods right now.
What a concept.
What an idea that we should all subscribe to.
Mm-hmm.
Robert,
sound nice.
Do you want to briefly explain to our listeners how you're feeling and follow up why?
I feel pretty good. Well, I feel like I haven't slept and like I'm strung out because I passed out at 7 a.m. after a massive adrenaline dump finally faded. Mm-hmm. And I had a massive adrenaline dump that kept me up until 7 because last night, like 2,000 people, including a mix of like black blocked up, you know, anarchist activists and like local moms and dads with leaf blowers started tearing apart a federal courthouse with their bare hands and a skateboard. And then when the federal agents charged out and started shooting and grenading them, they fought them back inside.
Saw that. I feel like I saw something about that. And then the feds were like, sorry, and they left.
They shot at people from holes, and so people threw bottles at their hands.
But then they were like, oh, they mean business, so I guess we'll leave them alone.
No, I think now the DHS secretary, the statement he just made was something along the lines of, if the federal agents leave that courthouse today, they're going to burn it down, which I... They might.
That's like a 50-50, right? Like 60-40 maybe on that?
There's a decent chance.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's going through a lot of the minds of any officer, like law enforcement officer in the vicinity of anything like this, knowing that like, well, if we leave, they might burn it down now because of that thing that happened. They know.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. If the feds actually like left the courthouse, I find it highly unlikely that it would be burnt down. I think it's much more likely that people would occupy it and attempt to start a rib restaurant out of it.
Right. Courthouse ribs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It'd still be riot ribs.
Barber courthouse. Yeah, it's riot
barber
ribs
courthouse.
Too, yeah.
People will figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not the important thing right now. So this has been happening for how many nights would you say at this point?
I think last night was night like 54.
It's been going on and on and on and on and on. Would you say that? Because obviously this started. This all started when the massive civil unrest across the nation occurred in response to George Floyd's murder. Would you say like it's grown quite a bit? Ebbed and flowed. Their response, I imagine, is probably fueling a lot of people coming out now.
It's ebbed and flowed. About like a week and a half ago, you know, when the feds were starting, you know, when the feds had been coming out for a few days and beating the hell out of people, the movement was at a real low ebb. You know, 300 people would have been a big action. It was usually more like 100 most nights. And, you know, as a journalist, those were the hardest days because you were just, when you were showing up, to just watch 200 people get the fucking piss beat out of them. Like that's what was happening, is these small crowds were showing up and trying to do actions. And, you know, they were at this point tough and skilled with all the things they needed to do, but there just weren't enough of them to do much. And they were just getting wailed on. And it was really a bummer. And it was kind of driving some of us crazy. And then the snatch van video went viral, and Donovan LaBella getting shot in the head went viral. And then President Trump started talking about how he'd quelled the protests, and he kind of made it into you couldn't have done anything better to revitalize and bring more people out into the streets. Like it absolutely changed the game.
Yeah, I wonder how that will continue. And the, I guess it's hard, you don't want to like apply logic to any of these people, really. Certainly not him.
Nope.
But I don't know. Sometimes you get a sense that like, well, okay, so like they poke the bear to make it worse so they can crack down worse.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels at this moment, maybe that's where it'll end up. It feels at this moment like they made a major miscalculation, right?
Right.
Like a lot of this happened because this crowd of moms showed up to protest the snatch fans and they shook a fence. And so the feds tear gassed all of these people. And one of the results of that is that like a whole lot of just like normal kind of middle of the road folks in Portland have now decided it's actually really fun to go out and fight federal agents every night. And maybe fight the police too. We'll see.
Yeah, you get the sense of that from a lot of the videos. Like, oh, you're just like, you've lived in like down the street and you were like, yeah. Oh, all right, let's do it.
Yeah, it was kind of like there was a lot of from the more cynical members of the press corps when like the moms and stuff started coming up. There was this feeling that like, okay, you know, we've seen this before. We'll get some huge numbers. They'll start doing marches. Will they march around the city and don't confront anyone because they're not going to want to like actually commit serious federal crimes, right? And then this will all fade away. But then the moms just started committing serious federal crimes.
Yeah, they seem to keep doing that. And yeah, it seems to be like, okay, well, if they do that, then we got to do this. But then if we do that, then that creates this image that is going to influence other people to come out. It's hard to tell if it will continue that way or if they will wise up. You know, like there are so many protests around. Protests are still going on. It's not necessarily national news all the time as it once was. But as we've seen, when the cops don't show up to the protests in riot gear and bother people, it doesn't turn violent.
Yeah.
And that like seems to be, yeah, maybe something they should consider. Who knows?
There are some tactical lessons for them here. Cause like the Portland police headquarters is right next door to the courthouse. And last night, the Portland police just let the crowd go after the feds. Like they didn't show up. They were nowhere nearby. And nobody fucked up with the Justice Center. Everybody just kind of like wailed on the feds, which was interesting. Like the kind of lack of loyalty between the two groups who had been beating up people together for a couple of weeks.
But yeah,
as soon
yeah,
as the feds became unpopular, like the cops were like, oh, we actually don't like the feds at all.
Yeah. We love our citizens.
Yeah.
Go get the feds, folks. It's like it's like that bit like you like slowly like back up into the crowd and go, yeah, let's get them, fellas.
Yeah, let's get them, fellas.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is something that really does worry me. I am worried that like people will focus too much on the feds and then be like, ah, when the feds leave, you know, we did it, and you know, the police are still a big problem here.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I guess that's one thing. Other thing I'm wondering, because I you know, these protests started in response to a lot of specific things, and it's this, when you go to these protests, do you get a sense that these are still like Black Lives Matter protests, or is it more just like, man, the cops they're just awful and the feds are here, and like this has ballooned into this other thing that is driving people out, as opposed to the sort of original purpose?
They are still question. Black Lives Matter protests. That's still like a big thing that drives a lot of what folks say. It drives a lot of the chants. It's driven a lot of like is a lot of why people got out there in the first place. That said, after 50 something nights of getting assaulted by law enforcement, there is now like a personal dimension of, no, we specifically hate these cops because they've been beating us up and we don't want them around anymore. It has gotten to be like, yeah, after 50 days of continuous fighting, it's not going to be exactly about the things it was when it gets started. But yeah, I would say Black Lives Matter is still centered as kind of the core of like, if we don't get these people out of our community and start spending the money that we currently spend on them on reinvesting in these, in, you know, minority communities, indigenous communities, Black communities, we're not going to fix any of the problems we have. Like, we have to actually like make some real changes for those people and also for ourselves. And it just, the thing that has galvanized everyone is the repeated assaults.
Right, right. And sort of, I think, opening up a lot of people to these, to the end goal, the ultimate goals, and that are swirling around. These are the solutions to this problem that we started protesting for. You're exemplifying the problems we're talking about against us. And it's almost like bringing, yeah, sort of like building solidarity through these shared experiences, building understanding of what those issues are and like what can be done about them. I saw there's that one guy, just a solid brick of a human man who was attacked by cops. There's video of him like with batons. They like try to beat his knees.
Oh, that guy was a bet.
And
he
just
like
does not
horse.
Move.
He was a brick.
Yes. And they like spray him with mace, and he's like, all right, twirls
Fuck
around,
you.
Flicks him off, and that's it. He was just a guy, just a guy, but everyone's just a guy. But he was, he had seen how the, protesters were being treated, through various, avenues of reporting. And he was like, and so I wanted to go and check it out. Cause I think he was in the Navy maybe.
Yeah. He was a Navy man. He'd been to the Naval Academy. Yeah.
And he was like, yeah. I don't like how these people are treating the protesters. I'm going to go now, too.
And he was like, I'm going to have a conversation with them and talk about the oaths that we both swore and
yes.
like how they're holding up to them. Yeah.
And their response was that freaking video.
Yeah.
And yeah, just sort of like building. Yeah. These sort of collective frustration and experience and pain and reaction to what's going on, and build, you know, getting the moms out there, the MILFs, as I call them.
You do that a lot. It's yeah. it is
mothers in love with freedom.
Mothers in love with freedom.
I want to be really clear what I meant by that. Thank you.
That's very funny, Cody.
thank you. Let them know.
Yeah. Man, it was. I just can't get over what I saw last night. Like, and some of it's terrifying because I am fairly certain people are going to get shot with live rounds at some point.
Yeah.
Like last night, at one point, a federal agent tried to arrest someone and was tackled by four people.
What?
They knocked his, yeah. they pulled their friend away and knocked his helmet off, and he pulled his sidearm and started waving it at the crowd.
Wow. Like,
yeah. But they de-arrested there. But it's also like, at some point, and it was one of those things where I was like, I'm glad this is a...
right, like, at least that person wasn't a cop, right? Like, that
would have... Yeah, because a cop would have shot them.
That's, like, yeah, that story has one very specific ending.
Thank God it was a federal agent.
Right, there's like part of it where it's like, some of these interactions you see, you're like, thank God these people have actually been trained in, like, restraint and precision. But at the same time,
with the guns.
Right. But at the same time, you're like, I wish these people weren't here who've been trained for like precision. You know, like, this weird, conflicting reaction to just like state violence happening. And you're like, well, that guy, at least he didn't shoot the person for stopping the arrest. But
well, and there's So one of the things that was really unique about last night is the crowd finally got the phalanx move right, where you get dozens or a couple of hundred people with interlocking shields, and you just take what punishment the police, and you keep moving forward, slowly inching forward as they shoot you to kind of make the point that, like, you can't stop us now. And they had leaf blowers all around the sides and in the back to blow tear gas away from the phalanx. And this crowd was just, like, continuously marching forward under fire while fucking Rage Against the Machine blared out of a boombox behind them. Just like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. And when they got close enough to the guys with AR-15s, they just started hucking bottles at them.
Wow.
There are things happening.
Yeah.
God, it is some of this stuff. It's like a complete breakdown of just like what people thought. Like, just like, it's like so many cops. Like, I thought we were cops and we can't do that. Like, I thought they weren't allowed to throw bottles at us. Do you have a lot of contact, like any contact or interaction with the actual like Portland police?
I mean, I was with an action on Saturday that lit their union on, building on fire.
Right. I mean, like beyond, just like beyond the observation, like, do you ever contact them? Do you get statements from them?
Not anymore.
What's the point?
One of the things that was really unique about the Portland police prior to all this is that they were famously very difficult to get statements out of for any reason, really.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a pain in the ass to get to talk to you.
Well, why would,
And I, you know, the more traditional good journalists in Portland, like Alex Zelensky and Sergio Olmos, have been, you know, getting statements and doing the proper journalism stuff. While the rapscallions among us,
watch as bottles get tossed at him. Yeah. Yes, I'm familiar with your live streams.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's just interesting that relationship and like, because also like, you know, they have arrested and like beaten up journalists during all.
They sure
of this.
Have.
Just that dynamic is just so fascinating to see, and like even just like. Simple stuff just makes me really laugh about them. They tweeted last night. Police social media is so funny.
It's amazing.
It's so good.
Bizarre.
It's just like this one thing they did last night during the courthouse fiasco you're talking about. Just they tweeted out randomly like, hundreds of people are clogging this area, Southwest 3rd Avenue outside the federal courthouse and packing it. This activity is being live streamed. Avoid the area for safety. And like, it's just so funny to me the choices they make and like the things they want to tell the city. Because this tweet went out at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So like at midnight on a Monday, they're like, "Hey everybody, steer clear of the federal courthouse." Like, what are you talking? Like, why bother? Who are you telling to avoid the courthouse at midnight on Monday? Other than this weird performative, like, by the way, Antifa's out. Stay in your homes.
It's very funny. It was very, very funny. It would have been interesting to see the crowd that we had last night go up against the Portland police again, because the feds are so much gnarlier.
Yeah.
You get like, I don't know that they know what the fuck to do at this point. I'm sure they'll figure out something really, really terrible.
Not gonna be
like,
great.
Obviously it's not over, and I'm sure the next chapter will have some horrible darkness in it, but it after just weeks of getting wailed on, like the last time before this that I really saw a real fight with the feds, other than Sunday, was like the Thursday before, where it had been like 70 or 80 people who were just, there was just this line of 40 soldiers shooting at like this crowd of the same size and just fucking beating the piss out of them. And it was, it looked like something from a fucking Hieronymus Bosch painting. They had like this giant burning bucket they carry that's like filled with tear gas pieces, and they like ladle it out onto the street. It looks like a fucking nightmare.
Yeah. A lot of heads made out of butts with horns and stuff. Classic Bosch stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of butt heads. But man, last night was real different. Last night the crowd won.
I think you're probably gonna go to sleep after this.
Yes.
So good work in all that you do. I think that's how it's going to be, right? You're gonna have those nights where it does feel like it's 40 armed like feds just like against a small crowd of people. And then others, it's rib night, right? It's look at all the ribs and moms everywhere. There was something just really inspiring and powerful and joyful about that, like the chants coming from all those moms who were like, "Fuck off."
Yeah.
Not in so many words. Sometimes I'm sure they did say that, but
there was the mom behind me, because as we were, there was like an hour where we were all crowded in around the courthouse. People were like barricading the doors with their bodies. And it was just kind of this like, are people going to push things enough that the feds do come out?
Mm-hmm.
And, I was looking around at all these mothers who, you know, a lot of them looked uncertain. They're all very new to this for the most part. And then one of the moms behind me said, I want to get a fucking sledgehammer and break open the doors of this courthouse. And then she went up to the door with a kid in block, and they both started trying to kick it down.
Unreal. I swear.
It was so weird.
Just some beautiful alliances being made this year. That's so bizarre.
And speaking of some alliances we've made this year, Cody, you want to intro what will happen after the break?
I couldn't possibly want to more.
Oh my God, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, so we're going to come back. You'll hear Katie's voice when we come back.
Katie.
From the woods. And so we will be interviewing Brenda and Hayden from Rock Music City. It's the Restaurant Opportunity Center, and talking to them about their workers' movement for the hospitality and service industry in their area, and sort of what they do and what can be done locally if you don't have the resources to get a sledgehammer with a bunch of moms and break down a federal courthouse building door. So, see you soon.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together.
Today we are joined by Hayden Smith and Brenda Weybrandt, who are both on the steering committee, I believe, for Restaurants Opportunity Center Music City, which is a collection of Nashville-based restaurants employees who are advocating for workers' rights within the industry. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Did I do that intro right? That's the gist of what you guys do?
Yeah, that was great.
It was a perfect intro, Katie. Right.
Thank you. Gosh.
Well,
yeah.
Thanks. And goodbye. All right.
Robert
we did
and
it.
Cody are learning. Yesterday, I talked extensively about how well I respond to positive affirmations. mm-hmm. Thank you for putting that to practice, guys.
Yeah, we all have our different things we respond to. For me, it's Waco.
Guys, according to your website, you are fighting to create a food service industry that empowers workers to thrive, not just survive. And you have been organizing fellow workers and allies to provide resources for people within the industry. Can you take us back to the beginning and tell us a little bit about the organization, how you got started?
Yeah, absolutely. I had done a little bit of organizing around a wage theft suit at one of my former employers, and through that started talking to some local labor organizers and stuff that got me hooked up with Restaurant Opportunity Center United, the national branch of the organization. And that kind of was going pretty slowly, and then COVID hit, and all of a sudden everybody was out of work, and it was like extraordinarily obvious that nobody was going to be there to help us, because like Tennessee's unemployment system was terrible. Like there was no safety net for us, and so like all of a sudden there was this huge interest in getting organized, and I met like wonderful people like Brenda here, who, you know, shared the same interest. We built a steering committee and it started rolling.
You guys had, the organization had been in existence a little prior to COVID-19, but then when this hit and you saw the impact on your community, it started to become more focused on a response to COVID-19?
Yeah, well, Restaurant Opportunity Center United has been around since 2001.
Okay.
And so I just got in contact with them, but the Music City affiliate didn't get started until like it was a response to COVID-19.
I see. So can you tell us a little bit about the work that you are doing in response to COVID-19? I believe this is your Safer at Work initiative.
Yeah, okay, I can take this one. You know, Safer at Work, it's a play on Safer at Home. And we're just trying to push restaurants to basically just follow the guidelines and do the bare minimum of keeping people safe and not getting them sick when they go out to eat. Like we've had a lot of bosses in Nashville just not pay any regard to the capacity limits, to anything like that. So we're trying to serve as a bit of a watchdog there and watch out for that. And then also we've been pushing for like stricter fines for when people do violate those things. We had a pretty good win with the beer board who yanked the beer licenses of a few local restaurants that weren't, you know, playing by the rules.
So, yeah, how long were you guys shut down and out of work before reopening? Have you seen, have any of the people that you work with or, you know, organize with been affected by this rushed reopening in all the different places?
Yeah, we all have, a majority of us. I actually work at a really large venue downtown Broadway that decided they aren't going to open until October. And they decided this in June before our case count started to go up. But so I brought up my issues to my employers probably towards the beginning of March. And I was like, hey, so if we have to shut down, seeing what was happening in Europe and Japan and China and everything, mm-hmm. if we have to shut down, what's our process on that? Like, are we going to get paid? Because front of house workers, we make $213, $450 right. an hour, depending on our position. What's our pay rate going to be at? Like, do we get to keep our health insurance since it's employee sponsored health insurance? And I'm fortunate enough to work at a restaurant that actually offers health insurance.
Yeah.
And they kind of laughed at me. They were like, oh, we're not going to shut down. No big deal, whatever. And then my last table was from Seattle. And that I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm going to like voluntarily stay at home after that. And then like, I think that was on a Thursday. And by the next Monday we were shut down and that was March 16th-ish, somewhere right around there. You know, and then we immediately had some of the bar owners on Lower Broadway who were notorious for flouting the laws start protesting and picketing and saying that it was their civil right to be open and to engage in their business. And, you know, we've called out several bars in Nashville and also outside of Nashville for having people sitting at the bar when it was not included in the phase one that we were in at the time. And we've seen so many pictures of bars that are just packed with nobody wearing masks. And now we have a higher per capita case count than Florida, just Davidson County, our county today,
really?
Higher per capita case count than Florida. Yeah. And that's of July 14th. We have like 111 cases per 100,000 people and Florida's less than that.
So Brenda, your restaurant that you work at has not reopened since then. And so you've just been out of work for this time.
Hanging out on unemployment, which in the state of Tennessee is $275 per week pre-taxes. So it's really imperative that we get something passed before the end of July. So Tennessee's CARES Act, we get our last payment on July 25th because of the way the week runs. We don't get it anything after July 31st. And so our cutoff date is the 25th. And so that's going to be a lot of hurt for a lot of people, right? And Nashville is built on hospitality and entertainment and tourism, and none of that is coming back anytime soon. And so Trump came out today and said, hey, if you don't like where you're at, just go find another job. Well, where are we supposed to find another job when we have hundreds of thousands of people in Davidson County out of work with what to replace it?
Right. Yeah, Cody and I were just chatting about that before this started, about maybe it's something that we talk about this week on another episode. But yeah, that whole go out, find another job, do something new.
Find your passion.
Okay? Yeah.
Now's the time.
Use
right?
this as a time to rebrand.
Now more than ever.
And I'm extraordinarily tired of hearing that, because something that motivated me to do this is like, this is my passion. You know, like I'm a career bartender. Like this is what I do. And I was fairly satisfied with where I was at. Until there was a major pandemic that all of our leaders handled horribly. So like, I don't want to go change industries and go like get an office job. Like I would not like that.
Also, where are these office jobs you're talking about? So I'm curious. So Hayden, have you also been out of work this whole time, or has your restaurant had you come back to work at some point? I'm very curious to know what the safety standards are like and how comfortable people are feeling. I know people want to work, but are restaurants taking care of their employees, you know?
So I am still haven't been called back yet. The restaurant is open, but they're calling people back in order of seniority. Mm-hmm. And I was fairly new at the time of the shutdown. So mm-hmm. I'm going to be like very last on that list. But a lot of our steering committee members have been called back. And as far as how safe the restaurants are being or how seriously they're taking it, it seems to vary wildly. Like mm-hmm. some places, you know, will close down all the time and deep clean if there's anything like close to an exposure. And then some places just, I mean, we keep having to fight these bosses that like won't even disclose that there was a case to their full staff, like much less the public. So mm-hmm. it varies wildly.
Right, because they're just trying to stay open.
Yeah.
When did restaurants actually open where you guys are? Like, did you do a thing where it was only outdoor, or was it always just open for dine-in? Or right now, our really stupid mayor, Mayor Garcetti, is doing this like al fresco initiative, and I just want to punch him in the face where it's just like...
Our governor made this baffling announcement that... They want restaurants and bars to stay open as long as people wear masks and social distance inside. And she made a statement that they don't think that situations like that contribute to the pandemic at all, which seems like like madness.
Holy crap.
like howling madness to me, but I'm not a medical professional.
I don't think you need to be.
Yeah. That sounds like a professional right. diagnosis to me. But yeah, would love to know what that was like for you guys.
Yeah, what the shutdown reopening phases, I hate that word, have been where you are.
We opened towards the end of May. I want to say like around May 20 something or other.
Yeah.
And our phase one was supposed to be like a 25% capacity mm-hmm. in restaurants and retail and, you know, no gyms and bars and all of that stuff. And then that went awfully because nobody really cared about it. And then 2 weeks we went to phase two and we were there for a while, which is 50% capacity in restaurants and retail. And I think gyms maybe could open partly, or maybe they kept those till phase three. But all throughout that, we saw several bars on Lower Broadway that were just open and partying all night long every night. And
yeah,
people coming in from out of town. And, you know, we have some employees that we hear that are just like, oh, this is a hoax and it doesn't matter. And we have some people that are literally scared for their life, that are immunocompromised, that are just taking all of the right steps and trying to protect themselves. And because we were given guidelines, and I put air quotes around that for all of you who are on a podcast, because we were given guidelines and not mandates, it's easy for restaurants to say, we don't have to comply with this. And right. we can just risk our staff to make a couple bucks. And it's just so frustrating that
absolutely
that we aren't considered a human being.
Yeah. And that compliance issue has been ridiculous because like nobody wants to take responsibility for making it happen. Like Tosha was like, all we can do is guidelines. And the health department was like, well, we've never had to deal with a pandemic before. And the mayor's like, it's definitely one of their jobs. It's definitely not mine. And so they just keep passing around the responsibility. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, being a very functional society that we have.
Yeah, we're nailing it everywhere. Yeah,
I love it.
So according to with my interactions with you guys and also looking over your website and everything, I understand that your focus is employee safety at work, but that is a larger umbrella than just COVID-19, which is obviously the immediate emergency. But I'd love to hear you guys talk about some of the other things that you have been working on, you know, like racial discrimination, sexual harassment, because these are both huge problems within the restaurant industry that I think a lot of people don't notice, or, you know, at least aren't aware of, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I can't wait for COVID to be over so we can start organizing around all of the other parts that are broken again, because so much of it is broken. But yeah, the racial equity campaign is something that we're kicking off right now. And I was doing like a mental inventory the other day of all of the managers I've ever had. And I think I've had one non-white front of house manager in my entire 10 years in restaurants. Mm. Yet just the hiring discrimination and the disparity there is really, really remarkable.
We were having a conversation in one of our meetings about how many non-white bartenders we have on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you think about all the restaurants you go to, how many non-white, especially male, non-white male bartenders have you seen? Like, that's not something that you see very often. And we hear that on the bars on Broadway a lot. Like, if you're not a female, you don't get a bartending job. And it's what?
Just in and of itself is grotesque, you know?
Yeah. The fact that people try to frame that, though, like, it's, I don't know, if they're, I will take not being harassed every single day at work for, like, not having one of those bartending jobs, and my heart really goes out to all of those girls, which is why we have to also pick up that sexual harassment campaign, because it is, the working conditions down there are ridiculous.
So when you guys talk about these campaigns, can you give me a bit more some more specifics? What do you have, like, specific goals that you've outlined that you're working towards? Are you going out and reaching out to other restaurants and employees? I'm just curious about your process and what this looks like.
Yeah, so I mean, the first step on these is always just like gather enough information about the problem and generally share workers' stories. Like, we try to always put the workers' stories front and center on all of these things. So we go around and just gather stories from people who have been like discriminated against in hiring or fired unjustly and things like that. And so we're gathering those to do a series on social media. And then through that, we can really outline some of the more like bad actors of the bosses in the industry. And then we generally tackle it on like a restaurant by restaurant or like hospitality group by hospitality group basis. There's one owner in Nashville right now that after the first round of Black Lives Matter protest tweeted something like, they had guards at their restaurant ready to shoot rioters and looters. And so he put himself out there pretty concretely, pretty solidly. Yeah. So
yeah, he made his stance known.
Yeah.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
You mentioned a case that you just won a little, I don't know how long ago, recently, with the beer place. Remind me of what the name, their name is. I don't know why Beer Brothers is coming to mind, but I bet that's not the name of it.
Oh, yeah, the beer boards.
So the beer boards.
In Nashville, in order to sell beer, you have to have a license from the beer board, but you also have to have a license from the liquor board to sell liquor.
I see.
So, because we live in the South and we're good old boys. and so the beer board had a meeting and was trying to decide what to do with these bars that were just ignoring the rules. And I went to that meeting and listened in on it. They, their previous fine that they would offer was a max of $1,000, and that was selling to a minor. And so they were really like figuring out, what do you do? What do you fine these bars for flouting a public health, like a public safety law that's meant to keep people alive? And so they decided to do a 5-day renouncement of their beer permit, which doesn't necessarily shut them down. It just prevents them from serving Budweiser or Bud Light, right, but they can still serve shots.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So underage shots are still okay. That's cool.
For $1,000.
Yeah. So you do work with like city council and things like that to sort of like integrate these like the public facing campaigns with more like policy based stuff.
Yeah. So our model of organizing is a workers' center and not a union, which is something we probably should have mentioned earlier. But in doing that, we try to tackle like industry wide issues. And so that ranges from, you know, talking to the mayor and the beer board to try to work out what these fines and punishments should be to, you know, doing marches on the boss or, you know, anything like that. But that was one where we did work with state.
Is that going well? I mean, what's it like working with them? Do you find them to be responsive?
We have a couple city council members that have been just absolutely wonderful. Councilwoman Sharon Hurt gives the coronavirus update at the top of every meeting and spent 4 whole minutes of that one time. It's like a 5-minute update, spent like the majority of it just voicing our concerns about like worker safety and everything. There's another one, Sean Parker, that's been the liaison between us and the health department. He's been really awesome.
Highlights something that we talk about a lot here, you know, the importance of focusing on local elections as well. It's really easy to overlook them, or in the past it has been, I think, for a lot of people. You're like focusing on
making sure those people are there respond, because it very easily could have been another person who does not take this seriously.
Yeah.
Our local Central Labor Council does election initiatives every year and focuses on labor-centered candidates. There's the word that I'm looking for. And so we're working with their coalition this year to help change some of the people that are in office.
Great. That's awesome. I see a note here about your pressure campaigns. Can you guys tell us a little bit about that?
That's just one of the tactics that
we pretty often
use. Yeah. We had this campaign against, a restaurant called Tin Roof 2 who like during phase one, when they were supposed to be like basically shut down, had people posting to, social media, like pictures of their bar just packed out. Like the bar top part of our phase one was that bar tops, like bar seating, wasn't supposed to be open. You had to like get a table and all of this. And it was like standing room only around the bar. And so we just mounted a social media campaign against them. And like, it was the fastest campaign I've honestly ever seen. Like 2 days later, they posted to Instagram, like our bar shut down. And
wow.
Yeah.
It's got to be somewhat satisfying to see how the power
actually being effective there.
Yeah, of furious citizens who are finally paying attention.
As like workers in the service industry, and you're dealing with all the safety stuff, anything to people who have to go get the jalapeno poppers at their fucking restaurant? How can they make that experience not the worst for people who are working? Like, obviously, the advice is to stay home and don't do that. But is there anything for people who just can't get enough of the fucking
jalapeno poppers?
Yeah.
Gotta have your pops.
I totally love jalapeno poppers so much. And I guess my advice on that would be get it to go.
Yeah.
Order carry out, like go to a park, sit outside with your friends where you don't have to worry about infecting God knows how many people who might happen to be in that restaurant, or how many of their friends or family members that might be immunocompromised. Like we have fought against restaurants being open for dine-in since phase one, because you cannot wear a mask when you're eating. Yeah. And it is proven that a mask saves lives and keeps people from getting this virus. And so you might be eating or drinking or sneezing or coughing, and asymptomatic carriers can pass this virus along. And then your server touches your plate and your cup and your dish to take it back, or your busser or your bartender or whatever. And then dishwashers wash that and it gets sprayed up in that water droplets in the air in the whole dish room. it is an inherently unsafe thing to do. And if you can do things like, as awful as it would be right now because it's so hot, but figure out how to do sitting outside on a patio, or like if you can do it safely, by all means, please do it. But if there's any question that you could potentially harm somebody else, especially if your management team isn't taking these guidelines and these cleaning the restaurant and making sure that everybody has proper PPE and hand sanitizer and gloves. We've heard of restaurants just not providing gloves and wipes to people because they can't get it. Just be safe and be kind to people and be considerate and understand that people are human beings first that are doing a job to pay their bills. And we are all going to struggle with that real soon. So like a little kindness goes a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah. 30% or more also.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Tip well, just get the food to go, fill a water bottle up with vodka, drink in a park, yell at a bird, you know, have a nice ethical night screaming at livestock.
Yeah, exactly. That's a perfect way. It puts no workers at risk. It doesn't put you at risk either. If you go eat inside, like, you are also putting yourself at risk of getting the coronavirus. So.
There's just, I mean, we've touched on this here and other times. There's just no central guidelines or consensus of truth, but
reality,
basic safety, you know, in other countries, in some businesses, I just don't know which businesses are paying attention to it before reopening, doing some like really deep rethinking of their safety protocols. It comes down to even air filtration systems. You know, not every restaurant has the same air filtration system set up. There are stories in China of people spreading it from being at their table, and the air conditioner brought particles to other tables, and they can map it out. They see that they were sitting in the vent flow, and these are the people that were infected on that day. And some restaurants might have taken this time to, you know, make changes like that, updating their filtration systems, but you cannot trust that everyone has. I mean, at the very least, we need some sort of like sign and window saying that they've passed a checklist of agreed upon like, here's public what we're safety doing. Measures.
Here's, we don't believe in the virus, so it's fine. Like a sign that says that would be fine with me too. Like, just let me know. Like, you think it's a hoax? Great, now I know.
Yeah. Oh, it's wild. Are there any other things that you guys have been working on that we should be aware of, or ways that we can support you?
Well, if you're in Nashville, don't go to Kid Rock's Honky Tonk or what else? What else? Rippies?
Is this COVID related or just like in general? Don't go to.
Well, it's one, just good advice, but two. That's the same owner that tweeted the stuff about rioters and looters, and then also has just been like ignoring all capacity limits. So do not support Kid Rock's Big Dumb Bar.
And the owner is not Kid Rock?
No.
Okay.
No, it's just a dude named Steve Smith, which like as a supervillain, I wish he had a more exciting name. But
it's very weird to steal someone else's brand for your restaurant branding, though. All right. I don't live in Nashville, but I will avoid that place.
Well,
and check us out online on our website, and I'm sure y'all will link it. And then we've got Rock_Music City on Instagram and @RockMusicCity on Twitter. And then we're on Facebook as well.
Also, you can donate, always accepting donations through the website. That's super helpful to keep the operation running and, you know, provide materials.
So one more cause that's really close to us that we didn't really touch on is the trans community, especially Black trans women who are murdered at just hugely disproportionate rates. And our Black trans comrade Steele wanted to make sure that we plugged the concept of paying trans women, because like they face so much more hiring discrimination and all of these things that we've talked about today. And even though they've ruled it illegal to fire people based on these things, like in an at-will state, those rules don't even really apply. So there's a Twitter account set up with a number of places to donate for these causes. That handle is at PayBLKTRNSWomen, at PayBlackTransWomen. And that's just like a great group, and really, really excited somebody's out there taking up that cause.
And I just, for our listeners, this will be linked in the tweets and everything, of course, but when you're looking for Rock Music City, it's ROC, not ROCK.
Yeah.
Might be helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Not Kid Rock style. Yeah.
Yeah, very different. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us, and good luck with everything that you're doing. Thank you for everything that you're doing. It's very important.
Thank you all for having us and using your platform to elevate the issues that workers are facing right now that are being underreported and not talked about, and shining some light on some of the systemic issues that coronavirus is bringing up for us, and like health insurance being tied to your workplace.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, who can survive on $275 a week pre-tax?
Nobody.
So we really need some Heroes Act passed.
Yeah. That $275 might as well be zero, because it will have you just as houseless in Nashville. Like, there's
and it everywhere. You can't live on that in any part of this country.
Are you guys getting the additional $600 right now from Congress on top of that?
Yeah.
Which is why that's so vital for it to be continued. And so far, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This is why we have to burn the country to the ground if something else isn't passed. Because, like, that's the only option. It's annihilation from tens of millions of people otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong. We are going to need federal assistance so bad, because like part of what has these restaurants open and violating these guidelines in the first place is that our industry didn't get a bailout. Like, we bail out banks every chance we freaking get. We bail out United Airlines every chance we get, but because like I think 7 in 10 restaurants are like a one-off, like independently owned thing. They don't have the like collective power to demand these sorts of bailouts. And so they're forced to operate to keep their doors open. So if we don't get federal relief on several levels, we're all gonna like, we're never gonna get through this virus, and we're all gonna die broke in the streets. It's really,
and, the only- and on that too, restaurant profit margins are 3-5%. Like, they are low. They are not making a lot of money on restaurants. So like, they might have a couple, like especially small mom and pop restaurants, like big chain restaurants or something different on that aspect. But with unemployment, right, like it took them 2 months to process mine. And I know some people that it's July who applied in March who still haven't gotten unemployment. And now, like, what happens when they go back to work and they're kicked off their unemployment, because our governor put up a form on the website specifically saying, if you got called back to work and you didn't go, we can refuse you unemployment.
Unbelievable.
And made a form for their employers to report people who refused to come back to work so they could kick them off their $275 a week. And you know, what happens for those people who have gone back to work and now have to close down because of COVID again, and because our spreads are worse, or because their employer didn't care to clean their restaurant? Are they going to have to sit through that backlog of unemployment again to get approved again? And how much, like, if you're already behind for a couple of months, how much can you really hope to like live without that cushion? You know, how far can you stretch what you don't have?
And like, what is that stress in general just doing to your health too?
I mean, there's so much to unpack, but I mean, and speak to your earlier point, like the majority of restaurants have a small profit margin, and the big chain restaurants, which I believe quite a few of them did get a bunch of PPP loans, the big restaurants that don't need it. And so we're looking at a landscape potentially post-COVID where none of the small businesses, the vast majority of the small businesses have survived. And that's devastating to think about. No one likes Dave and Buster's for their food.
No one likes Dave and Buster's.
No one likes, I've never been to Dave and Buster's, but I assume somebody.
We talk about germs.
Yeah. Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Hang out in the ball pit. My God.
I just use hand sanitizer on principle right now.
How does Chuck E. Cheese weather this? No one wants to, well, I'm sure some people do want to put their kids in those ball pits again. All right. Well, thank you again, guys. This has been really interesting.
Yeah. Thank you as well. It was a pleasure.
Thank you again, Brenda and Hayden, for speaking with us today. Make sure you follow them on all those wonderful social media accounts that they just plugged, and check out their website. And you can find us at Worst Year Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You can find Katie Stoll at Katie Stoll. You can find Cody at Dr. Mr. Cody. And you can find Robert only on Twitter at IWriteOK.
It's the only place.
Only place. Sleep.
Yeah.
And Robert's going to go to sleep now, and I hope everybody is wearing a face mask, washing their hands, and having a great day.
Wash the face mask, wear your hands.
That's what I said.
Wipe your eyes with
Cody.
Wipe your eyes with
your get those fingers in your tear ducts, people.
Yeah.
Get them real deep in there.
All right, that's the episode.
Dig the tears
out.
Everything's so dumb.
Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.